If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air. How's it going, Alex?
Hey, happy Wednesday. How have you been? I'm so keen to hear how this travel summit was for you, because I've seen all of your stories and I think you've been living this kind of celebrity dream for the last 72 hours in your peak everyone knowing you environment, which, by the way, is deserved, because I think with you, you're in everybody's living rooms, right? You're on everyone's phones. Everyone can see you because of YouTube. So people do think that they know you, but you're not actually corporately social, are you? Like, you don't actually go to many work engagements, public engagements very often at all. So that's why I'm sitting here with popcorn and I'm like, oh, let me hear how awkward this was for him. let me relish in how he responded to the public.
Well, you know, I will say I was a bit anxious before going, also because I told some people this at the event. Like, my honest feelings for several years has been that people hate my videos. The people who watch them because they have to. Like, I'm genuinely not making this up. In my mind, this is like what I've been thinking. And then it's like, because the comments are either, yeah, some positive, mostly like neutral, commenting on what I'm saying or like sharing their opinions. Yeah. And then, of course, a lot of negative. But like, since I don't go to these types of things, I guess I don't have those occasions to like ever feel like I'm meeting people who give a lot of praise. So to me, this weekend was just like the most incredible weekend ever for many reasons. I think everyone at the event had a lot of fun, you know, whatever they were doing. But I just met so many amazing people who really, really touched me. Mm-hmm. And I just have to give a few shout outs, because the number of people who listen to the podcast is
fantastic.
What blew me away. Because
brilliant.
Like, I mean, I know people watch my videos, but then one of the first people comes up to me, he's like, you're not as tall as I expected. And I'm like, wait a minute, that no one has ever told me that. I'm like, the podcast? He's like, you got it. So yeah, I got to give that shout out to Hanny, because he literally says he listens, like he uses the podcast every week as motivation to go to the gym. He's not allowed to listen to the podcast until he's in the gym. Also have to give a shout out to Sarah, Paidong, Bryce, Anna. There's so many more people who I'm sorry I'm forgetting, but just amazing. I want you, actually, everyone, so many people are like, where's Alex? Where's Alex? So I think next year when this happens, it would be so fun if you came. And maybe I'll talk to Ricky from Prince of Travel, who arranged this incredible event. But how awesome would it be if we had like a live podcast session at
the
summit?
That could be good. That could be good on air live. I mean, it's always fun to roast you, but the excitement that runs through my veins when I imagine roasting you live with a, with an audience that is hopefully on my side. Definitely.
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it. But it's so good to hear that you came across so many listeners as well.
Yeah,
that's
by
amazing.
By the way, I also texted you it's not only, you know, listeners, but some industry people. So like Air Canada's head of Aeroplan and head of partnerships, Scott and Jay, both also. So Jay says he loved the podcast, which I'm like, that's absolutely mind-blowing to me. And it also makes me terrified of what we're saying about different airlines on the podcast.
That's why they love it. We can't change.
Yeah, thinking about the different people who are listening. But also shout out to Jay, because I think I've even talked to you about Air Canada.
Are they also in Air Canada?
How incredible it is. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, great. Well, I mean, look, we've spoken before, haven't we, about Air Canada. I fly them quite a bit if I'm going back and forth to Montreal, if I don't go back directly to the Middle East and I do London. And we're definitely North America's favorite airline in terms of my opinion of it. And I think you share the same thing, right? Air Canada or Delta, if you're speaking about North America?
I mean, I can't say that like one airline is absolutely better than the other, but I will say that Air Canada's award program, Aeroplan, is by far the best in North America.
And that reminds me, I need to credit the Thai Airways flight I just did to Aeroplan as per your instructions. Because I checked the boarding pass and their frequent flyer number wasn't on there. And I knew that was the case because check-in was super expedited and really, really quick. And I said, is my frequent flyer number? They were like, yes, we've got it. But the PNR was actually the same PNR as my QR flights to Seoul. It was all on one ticket. Yeah. So it ended up blending into one PNR. I just had adjusted it. They added Thai Airways. So I think automatically my Oneworld, you know, Qatar Airways Privilege Club number went in rather than the Star Alliance. So it hasn't credited to anywhere. So I should definitely get that sorted.
Yeah,
thank you for the reminder.
Good. I have to say, if someone just heard a plane go by, hopefully it's not super audible, but I'm sitting in a hotel with a view of the entire lake here in Toronto. And famously, you know about Billy Bishop Airport in Toronto, Alex?
Yes, I do. And this is something that I properly got to grips with in terms of knowledge when I was last in Toronto, because am I correct in saying this is kind of the London City-esque airport of Toronto?
Yes, but there's a few things that make it even more epic. The first being that you can literally walk to the airport through a tunnel from downtown Toronto. So a lot of people just in the morning or whenever they're flying, take their carry-on and walk to the airport. And I was like, what? That sounds like a dream. My dream scenario, being
that
able
is
to
dreamy.
Walk to an airport. Traffic can't stop you. The only thing that can slow you down is like construction or red lights. But otherwise, it's just straight to the airport. And it's really so close. Of course, another difference from London City is that they only handle turboprops here. Specifically, it's pretty much only Dash 8s.
And that's Dash 8s of Porter, right?
Porter and Air Canada.
Air Canada, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Nice.
So anyway, those planes are literally flying, I would say like 200 meters away from my hotel window as they take off. So if you hear anything,
that's turboprops. I don't think we're hearing anything other than maybe a gentle, you know, sounds like a phone vibrating in the background. I haven't heard anything yet. Speaking of things that we've heard about, though, I have just tweeted now, we have a date for the marriage of SAS and SkyTeam. They have made it official. I mean, we expected it was going to be this date, but they've announced now when the wedding is. So SAS will divorce Star Alliance officially on the 31st of August. We believe it's quite amicable at this stage. No mediation required. And just like that, I mean, SAS, like, have some time to yourself, perhaps.
Scared
you know,
of being alone?
God forbid. God forbid you just, you know, have some time to reflect on, you know, the path forward. Nope, jumping straight into bed with SkyTeam for the benefit of the SkyTeam passengers the next day on the 1st of September. SkyTeam just tweeting now, it's official. We're delighted to announce that SAS will be joining SkyTeam on the 1st of September. And with SAS becoming a member, our network will grow with more seamless connections to and from Scandinavian hubs and destinations. And do you know what I love? How the aviation sector has not moved on from the word. If you are discussing any kind of transit or connection, it can only ever be seamless. Yeah, that's true. The adjectives. There are no alternative adjectives used to describe any kind of connection. If it's a connection, yeah, it's seamless. And that's it.
Can we just
what about
say,
yeah, smooth and efficient? Or
but can we just say, I don't know. Anything in aviation when it comes to transition like this ever been the definition of seamless? I don't think so. Yeah.
Never. And that's why it's so ironic, because they set the bar way too high. I mean, I would challenge passengers to get in touch with us and describe when the last time their travel experience was genuinely seamless. Don't get me wrong, it can be, but I would consider even just a small hiccup in security to be, okay, we no longer qualify for seamless territory, yeah, here. So there we go. But that's the tweet. That's the age that we are living
in. I am curious how I'm curious what happens for people who fly specifically on August 31st, because do they leave in the morning? Do they leave at 11:59 p.m. and then at, you know, so people are flying overnight, they take off in Star Alliance, land in SkyTeam. I have so many questions about specifically how that's going to work. I've said it before, but I'm personally excited for SAS to join SkyTeam. I think that Star Alliance has so much representation in Europe. They, you know, different airlines are...
representation. Yeah. Like it's... like we're discussing politics. Something to do with diversity. Yeah, no,
about, you know, one world, what we were saying.
No, okay, yeah, their footprint over Europe. You're right.
So
yeah, okay, Star Alliance footprint
world
is...
in Europe.
SkyTeam,
yeah, it has quite a few airlines in Europe, but I'm just excited about this. I'm excited to be able to connect to Virgin Atlantic on SAS. I'm excited to be able to connect to China Airlines on SAS. And historically, SAS has not been super close to many Star Alliance airlines, like Lufthansa Group, as close as they could be. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, yes, we shall. You know, you were just speaking about the kind of next day switch. It got me thinking, somebody had written in via Instagram about this, about how culturally there is a huge gulf in the understanding on one side to the other of flights that are timed after midnight and the mistakes that are made by passengers by arriving on the wrong day. And the difference is that in the Middle East and Asia, Far East, South Asia, Southeast Asia, and so on, it is perfectly normal to have flights at 2 a.m., 1:45 a.m., and so on and so on. In fact, these are a lot of the time, these are when the bulk of the flights are scheduled for. And so somehow there is a better understanding within society of the fact that if it's at 2 a.m. on Wednesday the 10th, then you're arriving to the airport late night on Tuesday the 9th. But I was reading a report recently, and this is somebody that flagged this to me, and then I spoke with Finnair, one of our favourite European carriers, who had to retime the flight that leaves from Malaga to Helsinki because people just kept arriving on the wrong day. So the flight was after midnight, around 1-ish. I think it was actually a bit earlier. I think it was 00:55, something like that. And people would arrive to the airport on the date of the flight, of course, basically 24 hours late, and people just kept missing it. And Finnair have this, by the way, I absolutely disagree by making that kind of flight a red eye. That's horribly uncomfortable on a single aisle aircraft within Europe. It lasts all night. Finnair, what were you guys thinking? I understand aircraft optimization, utilization, efficiency, and so on and so on, but as a passenger, I would avoid that. But it's amazing to me that it seems that in Europe they haven't been able to grasp it, that the passenger mind hasn't been able to grasp it, probably because in Europe most airports are closed at night, right? So it's not you know, they're just not as well trained with the idea. What do you think?
I 100% agree that it is very confusing to people, because I mean, I've been flying around the world since I was very young, but I remember being 19, booking my first flight that left, let's say, at 1 or 2 a.m. And I was also like, wait a minute, what day is this? And it makes you a little bit confused. Of course, you eventually figure it out, but I can see how it's confusing. I think that's why airlines obviously avoid having flights that leave exactly at 0000, you know, at midnight on the dot.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
this winter, I will say there was a flight from Dubai to Riyadh, I think on Flynas, that left at 0000. So I was talking to Oscar, even now, I was discussing with Oscar, like, what day do you think you book this for? And he's like, well, it's still, if it leaves at 0000, it just leaves on the first minute of whatever day you book it on. So you need to arrive the night before.
It's a lot for people that are not used to traveling in the night to be able to accept. And that's why it was funny that I've started to see some real life examples of airlines who are actively thinking, we're not sure if our passengers will get the memo, or they, you know, some airlines were sharing data with me that were showing how many were missing the flight. So yeah, it's an interesting one. Also elsewhere, what's been going on in the news? This is more politics, but I just wanted to quickly bring this to your attention, Dan, because this is how aviation plays a role. And it's something for us to keep an eye on, on the radar as this story develops. Have you heard about the UK's attempts to deport what they refer to as illegal immigrants to Rwanda? Right. So this is like the fixation of the current failing UK government right now, that haven't been able to think about anything else other than getting like 30 people out of however many tens of thousands, you know, not least the fact that Britain is widely considered to be broken. You know, public transport and infrastructure doesn't work. The roads are full of potholes everywhere. They are struggling in terms of inflation, the economy, the cost of living crisis in the UK that has continued well beyond the likes of their European counterparts, and so on and so on. All of this is well documented. The aviation part of this story about the deport to Rwanda is the Prime Minister, who is expected to basically be the outgoing Prime Minister and the outgoing Conservative Party at some point this year. At the latest, the election can be held is January. So after however many, well over a decade, I think they've been in power 13 years or something like that, the Conservatives are set to be out, right? Which is the party towards the right when you're looking at the political spectrum. And they're going to be replaced most likely by the Labour Party, who are on the left, that the current leader is a bit more centre-left. Anyway, Rishi Sunak, the current Prime Minister, his focus, his fixation to try to woo the right is how they will get planes to Rwanda. They will get these flights to Rwanda. Rwanda, Rwanda, Rwanda. They as if it's going to fix every domestic issue in the mess that the UK is facing.
It sounds like
that one aircraft will take off eventually, right? It's insane. One aircraft will, I think, especially when you're out of the UK and you're watching it, you just have this better grasp of how messed up and weird this looks. Yeah. Okay, you look insane focusing on something that is basically nothing in terms of this deportation scheme. So their idea is they will deport to Rwanda. Okay, Kigali, by the way, love Rwanda. Anyway, I mean, Rwanda has had a very complicated and troubled recent history, but in terms of its progression and in terms of the way that Kigali has had investment, you've been, right?
I have.
Okay, so the deport to Rwanda scheme has been ruled by the Supreme Court in the UK as unlawful. But what the Prime Minister is doing is trying to change laws so that they can ignore that law and just continue with it anyway. The aviation part of it is that they are unable to find a single airline, leasing carrier, so lessor, wet lease operator, and so on, who will be willing to publicly be involved with these deportation flights to Rwanda. Nearly every single carrier has distanced themselves from this. You have carriers like Titan Airways, who are one of the more respected wet lease carriers globally based in the UK, who are publicly tweeting, by the way, we're not involved in any of this Rwanda stuff, because they know that these airlines are going to be absolutely hammered and targeted. They will suffer immense reputation damage if they are going to align themselves with such a scheme. Okay. Rwandair, the national airline of Rwanda, Rwanda being where the UK wants to send the migrants to, Rwandair has also said, don't involve us. We're not deporting for you, no matter how much you pay. So they are now trying to find an option. And the Prime Minister hinted that they found an operator. And now Twitter's going crazy trying to find who is the leasing company who has sold their soul into agreeing to be... Well, it hasn't been announced. Who? Oh, for God's sake. No, have they checked that? They probably forgot. Maybe DAT are too busy in their new committed relationship with British Airways. But I wouldn't put it... You know what? I think even DAT has the morals not to go anywhere near it. Anyway, so nobody knows who it's going to be. Most of the... Even the Spanish companies, like Privilege, Star and others, have said, it's not us. We don't believe it's Vamos. In comes the CEO of Ryanair, Michael O'Leary, who says, yeah, I'll do it. He said, if the government is willing to pay and I've got extra jets sitting around this winter, sure, I'll take them to Rwanda. And of course, social media goes crazy. What do you think?
Well, I'm not surprised because I would say Michael O'Leary is kind of trying to stir the pot. He likes to say things to upset people. You know, like he says, they want to introduce standing room only or charge for toilets. It gets people talking. He knows people are going to fly Ryanair regardless of what he says because they want the cheapest tickets. Yeah. So I just think, you know, he's at a point in his career where he can say things to have some fun. Is he serious? Possibly. I don't know. But he also knows that if he did it, it just helps the airline's bottom line. And honestly, the people who are flying with Ryanair won't book something else just because of that. So, yeah, that's my take.
I think that brings us on slightly to Boeing and what's been happening. I was on Al Jazeera broadcasting last week, and the anchor who I was having the conversation with live on air said to me, does it really hurt the aviation sector right now that passengers are, in some cases, choosing to avoid Boeing because they know that Boeing is in crisis and so on and so on? Is this going to impact, you know, profitability of the sector? To which I gave a very quick no, because the truth is that no matter what, globally, passengers are driven by fares, by the price and the cost of travel itself. And then everything else, the data shows us, is secondary to that. Are there some isolated cases where some people are, for example, avoiding Ryanair because of what the CEO said about deportation to Rwanda, avoiding all Boeing aircraft because they're concerned about quality and production with Boeing in the US and so on and so on? Sure, there's isolated cases. There's also isolated cases like, I mean, I'm an isolated case with some of the airlines I choose not to fly with, right? So it's you are the opposite of an isolated case. You're the case where I'm asking you why. Why are you doing this to yourself?
Yep.
You know?
That sounds familiar. It is interesting. We've said this so many times, but when you talk to a quote-unquote commoner, a non-av geek, someone who just flies normally, and they say something about the 737 MAX. You know, I had one of my best friend's girlfriend was coming home from some event, and she was telling me how, oh my God, I realized I was on a 737 MAX. And I said, damn it, this is why I always book Spirit instead of United, like, because they don't fly them. So,
oh, wow.
Wow, look at that. Spirit is getting some business because they're all Airbus.
Wow. Well, speaking of different, I was going to say speaking of sketchy carriers, but then I realized I was about to refer to British Airways. Okay. So it wouldn't. How were your flights? You flew from Kenya to London, from London to Miami, and then Miami to Toronto. And when we last spoke, I was telling you how to spend your transit time at Heathrow. So
firstly,
how
kind
was the
of
journey?
Missed that I flew Miami, DC, Pittsburgh, Toronto, but.
Oh, yes. I was so impressed with what...
Yeah,
we'll come
to
that in a minute.
So,
okay, tell me.
The BA flights, the first one, I just slept most of the way. It was fine. I didn't need anything. The seat is super comfortable, the new club suite.
Mm.
The second flight on the A380, interestingly, I was surrounded by Germans. Every passenger was German and the crew was German, based in Germany.
What?
So I was like, am I on Lufthansa? It was very like mindfuck because even the crew had like a German accent. So that was kind of an unusual British Airways experience. I slept a lot on that flight.
Wow, I wouldn't have expected that.
I slept a lot on that flight, got to the US, and the US is always... So firstly, I will say that Miami in immigration was the most incredible experience I've ever had because I have global entry, but Oscar does not because Swedes cannot have it. So I always have to... I at least can take him in the US citizen line because he's with me and we get slightly faster treatment. But on this day... there was literally not a single person in line. So we just breeze right up. He asks us a couple questions. We get through, get to our sketchy hotel, which you saw on my Instagram.
Oh my God. All I saw was the carpet and the curtains. And I
was grossed out. And the worst part, of course, is in the US, everyone wears their shoes indoors. So you can imagine how filthy that carpet was. Of course, we were wearing shoes also because we didn't want to, you know, touch that floor.
Be on the surface of that shoe. Yeah, yeah, I get it. You have to as a byproduct of the other people's 100%. Decision. Yeah.
So that was kind of bad. Then we flew American. And I will say, you know, all the jokes we make about U.S. Airlines and, you know, I posted like our pre-departure beverages.
Do we joke? Do we joke about U.S. carriers? I don't recall.
But, you know, all the jokes about U.S. airlines and how... So the pre-departure beverage on my flight was still water in a plastic cup. And your sister always cracks me up so much, Demi, because she goes... Her response is just, not even lemon or ice? Question mark. Like she, I would just love to see her.
The amount of times I know when she's watching your stories because I can see her facial expressions on the other side of the room. I'm thinking it can only be Dan. And then she'll be processing it with such a frown, with her mouth open, confused. And then I'm thinking, here it comes. 3, 2, 1. And she'll say to me, have you seen? I'm like, yep. Yeah, I already know. She was like, but they don't even, I'm like, yeah.
But
you
the
see
funniest
it?
Thing yeah. about that you is that, that, like, you know, you, yeah, like we joke about you guys being fancy and everything, but you grew up flying a lot of EasyJet back and forth to Malaga.
Exactly.
So her being
exactly.
So
I'm a man of the people.
By American Airlines first class is just like so funny to me.
No, she doesn't. It's not because she thinks that it should all be so fancy and whatever. Like, she, you know. I think she just, in her head, for some reason, maybe because of the Home Alone movies, maybe whatever, because she hasn't flown, like, you know, in the US, I think she thinks that if you're flying American Airlines and you're in what they call first class, then it should look something on par with Singapore. That's where I think her thought process is at. So then when you show a plastic cup with water, she's like, what? Because had you have shown, I'm an American and I'm basic economy and blah, 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 she wouldn't have any questions. It's just the fact that your caption says first class, but she's staring at a plastic vending machine cup.
I know. But what I was going to say is that there are some very redeeming qualities of flying US Airlines. Like, for example, the Wi-Fi on both my flights was incredibly fast. So it worked so well. So that's something I was very grateful for. I think there's... you know, something very nice and smooth about transiting domestically in the US, like I had to do in DC.
Yes.
Of course, you saw there was like an unbelievably beautiful Admiral's Club in
DC. I want to know more about that. So just explain that to the listeners, because I saw that and I was like, I need to go
there. It blows many, many lounges out of the water. So American Airlines has two types of lounges. They have the flagship lounge, which they use at their long haul hubs, which are only for long haul paid business class passengers or people with One World status. But then they have the Admiral's Clubs, which are spread all over the US. The thing is, I'm sure your sister will gasp when she hears this. If you're flying first class in the US, you don't get lounge access. That's a separate thing that you need either a credit card to get you or a foreign status. So these lounges are everywhere as part of the business to, you know, incentivize people to get Admirals Club memberships. The reason the one in DC is so nice, well, firstly, they've made some big changes to that airport as a whole. So I think in connection to that, American was able to build a lounge very recently. But of course, all the congressmen are flying to and from DCA Airport, Reagan National Airport in Washington.
Okay.
So there's a reason the airport is suddenly so nice, because who's so flying through it? The people
yeah.
who literally decide what aviation and everything else is like in the US.
Yeah. And that's often the case. For example, if you go into central London and you go on the tube, on the underground, Westminster Station, beautiful, safe, has those nice glass doors so that people don't, you know, there's no safety risk when the exposed track and so on. It's amazing. Of course it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's Westminster. These are where the decision makers are having to go to work every day. So you can bet your, you know, everything that that's where they're going to be allocating priorities at some point or another. So, for example, that lounge that you showed me, that was
yeah,
the Admirals
right.
Club, right? And would, if I was flying from DC to Montreal, let's say, could I enter there
yes,
with my One
exactly.
World Emerald?
So that's the irony.
And that's only because
yeah,
it's international.
So if you have One World Emerald with Alaska.
But if I was going to
American,
LA, I couldn't do it.
No. You could. Anywhere yeah. you're flying, but
right.
you need to have international One World status. So it needs to be from a foreign.
Oh,
carrier.
The status itself.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It's part of the business model, as I said.
Well,
so, yeah.
is that just. Do you think that's because that would just wipe out a whole load of people who otherwise would have been eligible, and then there's no point in having a lounge?
Well. Okay, what are you asking?
So what I'm saying is, had they have extended that rule in a normal way, where, for example, if you have top-tier status with American Airlines, then you are also welcome to use that lounge, wouldn't there just simply be too many people with
exactly.
that status? So the reason why is they say, nope, we can welcome you if you are Privilege Club Platinum with Qatar Airways and therefore One World Emerald, or British Airways Executive Club Gold, One World Emerald. But if you're homegrown, no
yeah.
entry. If your status is homegrown.
That's exactly the point. Because I think that it comes down to
okay.
One World rules say that Sapphire and Emerald members should get lounge access. So American Airlines can bend
yes.
those rules for their own members. Alaska Airlines can do the same. Because then it's not a One World rule,
right.
it's an internal rule. But
right.
they have to honor that policy for other One World airlines just the same way as they want, you know, their status being honored by those airlines when their passengers are in other countries. So that's ultimately why they have to let foreigners in. But it's a great reason to have status with British Airways or, you know, Qatar Airways, whatever it may be.
Yeah,
instead
anyone else
of airlines
other
here.
Than-
The only,
yeah.
you know, of course, you're missing out on some perks if you fly American a lot, but it's good.
Am I correct in thinking that Qantas had tried something similar with the first area in their Sydney lounge?
Yeah.
I need to check on that. Quite a few years ago. Also, Cathay Pacific had dabbled in the idea of not allowing in the beginning. What's the name of the first lounge in Hong Kong?
Yeah, there's several. The Pier, the Wing.
I think Cathay had dabbled with exploring if they could do something, for example, like Qatar Airways, where if you're One World Emerald, you can go to a lounge, but Qatar Airways were quite clear from the beginning. That doesn't mean it's going to be
yeah.
a Safwa, because they didn't actually want the world's foreign airline top tier frequent flyers in Al Safwa. But they have to, as per the contract that they have with One World, offer some kind of lounge or a lounge. And so that's why they invested in doing that, but not allowing Al Safwa. So that's really interesting. I mean, your
yeah.
story,
yeah,
your Insta story where I had seen that this Admirals Club at DC, this was
yeah.
at Reagan, right? This was the first airport facility lounge in a long time that I was thinking...
Yeah.
Oh, that looks really, because it just looked very hotel lobby. Like it
yeah.
genuinely, I started to think, I'm crazy that
and,
I haven't been because it's so close to Montreal
and
as
guess
well.
Guess what,
so.
Alex? They have avocado toast. Someone making it for you fresh in the lounge. And from the
no.
windows, you have a view of the US Capitol and the National Monument. So Those are just...
Let's do that. Let's go there. Let's. You know, we were talking about a trip where we're going to do a podcast and a vlog and everything, maybe a live. Let's do that. Let's do Washington. You know, the political side of me will love it. It's the year of the election. We soak up the red versus blue. All the drama plays out live from this beautiful Admirals Club lounge where we host an audience with Dan and Alex. And we have a great view of the US Capitol, of some older aircraft that I'm going to ignore because I saw some T-tails in your shots. We are not flying on those, okay? And then we can coordinate with our good friends who listen to the podcast at Air Canada and get out of the US and say bye to the division and the electoral chaos and land in the land of the free and the home of the maple leaf syrup. And... maple syrup, maple leaf, and so on in Canada.
So, all right. Yeah. Speaking of DC, we have some news out of the DOT, and specifically Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation in the U.S., has seen through some very, very interesting and positive changes to compensation. Well, not directly compensation, but new rules helping U.S. travelers. So basically, for the first time, which sounds absolutely crazy that this has not existed before, but passengers will be entitled to an automatic refund. They don't have to do anything if their domestic flight is delayed more than 3 hours or their international flight is delayed more than 6 hours on flights leaving out of the U.S. And I still have a lot of questions about this. For example, if my flight is delayed 3 hours, let's say it takes off 3.5 hours late, do I automatically get refunded, but I still take the flight? That's one question I have that hasn't really been clarified.
Do you know that the legislation says the automatic refund has to be with you within 7 days?
Yeah, so these airlines, basically, this is all...
No vouchers, no credits, cash.
So the motivation for this that... Secretary Pete Buttigieg explains is that yes, the refunds are great, but the intention is really to avoid for airlines to avoid scheduling their planes so tightly, so it leads to unnecessary delays. Yeah. So it's supposed to have a preventative effect, which we'll see. You know, they introduced legislation that requires compensation where I am in Canada a few years back, and speaking to people at the conference, they didn't really say it's had a huge impact on how the airlines seem to schedule flights. So we'll see. But I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll see some improvements.
I think this is great. For consumers, this is great. For airlines, and the devil will be in the detail, and I haven't seen the exact details that airlines have been issued with just yet from the Department for Transportation, from Secretary Buttigieg's department. For the airlines, I'm concerned that they might just simply start raising fare prices initially while they see how this is going to affect their bottom line. There is always a way in which, you know, the reality is airlines are never just going to take the hit, okay? It's always eventually trickles down to the fare-paying passenger. At the same time, that's not a valid excuse for just simply allowing airlines to get away with not operating as they should be or as they've promised when you've booked that flight because they were too overambitious with that schedule. They were too greedy with the amount of, you know, the little ground time they thought your aircraft required that day and so on. Pete Buttigieg said he was going to change all of this. Okay, you know that I was with Secretary Buttigieg last year in Montreal. We had a good discussion and he told me he was working really hard with his team on ensuring that airlines are not going to be getting away with what we had seen specifically in the summer of 2022, which was chaos globally, wasn't it? That was the big COVID bounce back and nobody had their luggage arrive with them. It was chaos everywhere. It was the year that people finally took the whole put an air tag in your luggage seriously. And there were delays and cancellations, staff sickness, staff shortage, and so on. It was a really difficult summer for the industry and for passengers if you're trying to get around. My friend came to stay with me 3 times throughout the summer and every single time his luggage didn't arrive with him. And I told him, don't check in luggage. And then, you know what's funny? The fourth time, so 3 times he lost his luggage. When he came the fourth time, No, the third time, he had an AirTag in his luggage, so he was able to retrieve the bag through AirTag. CBS saw my tweet about him and then wanted to be connected to him. And then my friend was on US TV talking about, on CBS, about his experience losing his luggage and how the AirTag helped him and so on and so on. So that was an interesting thing for Jassim. Anyway, Buttigieg is not done yet, though. What I will say, there is more legislation ahead. Pete Buttigieg is focused on initially expanding the rights to protect the safety, but also the dignity of passengers who use wheelchairs. You know, wheelchair users, there's so many tweets and documented evidence of how so many are forgotten on the aircraft, are left after disembarkation, are made to wait and wait and wait and wait, and it doesn't matter about that connection because they have to wait for 230 odd other people to leave first, and so on and so on. So there's legislation ahead for that, which can only be a good thing. Also, he is going to be introducing some kind of ban on the fees that some airlines try to apply to families when they want to sit together. So, for example, a family traveling basic economy on a basic economy fare, that would be a fare that would be as restricted as the likes of, for example, a Ryanair fare, perhaps in Europe. And then they say, oh, four people, you want to sit together? Well, you're going to have to pay, otherwise we're going to allocate you everywhere. And of course, they're a young family in that scenario. And really, they should be, you know, sitting together. And I always think that this is something that airlines should just give up on trying to make money with, in terms of not seat allocation, but splitting up families deliberately through algorithm. Right. It's unethical. It's ridiculous. It's stressful for the passengers. It's stressful for them in a normal scenario. But where I think this would really matter is, God forbid, in the event of an emergency, how much that would slow down the process if you've got mum in row 10 and kid in 17 and father in 28. Those parents are not going to leave until they are satisfied that they are all together. And that's going to be costly in an emergency. And whose fault is that at the end of the day? It's the airline, because they couldn't just suck it up and sit them together, knowing that they're a family on one booking, knowing that, for example, the kids are under 16 years old or so on and so on. So I think that it's a bit, you know, a bit of a stretch, unfortunately, that it's going to require some kind of federal legislation, because airlines can't just have a common sense approach here where, look, if you're obviously a family and you've got kids in the booking that are under 16, just sit them together, for God's sake, if there's room. You know, and you already make money through ancillary revenue opportunities like baggage and on food and priority boarding and everything else. Let us not make air travel even more stressful for those that already find it stressful.
Just the fact that airlines, several full service airlines, are now charging you if you want to change your assigned seat, like at check-in, they put you in a seat, you have to pay to change. That's, why are we flying a full-service airline if we're not even getting to change our seat at check-in? I was shocked that Air Canada even does this. I was given an aisle seat toward the back. They wanted to charge me $13 on a 45-minute flight if I wanted a window seat. So stuff like that, I'm just like, come on. Like, I might as well fly low cost, because what's the point in flying here if I don't get any more benefits, if I don't have status?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. Well, look, elsewhere in the news, Dubai have announced this huge new development to the expansion of what is the current Al Maktoum Airport, which is Dubai World Central. Okay, so DXB is Dubai International Airport. That is Dubai's current major hub. That's the home to Emirates. Whenever you fly to Dubai, you know, 99.99% of the time, unless you're flying on beyond for a technical stop to the Maldives, then you're going to DXB, right? But there has always been this plan for Al Maktoum, which is Dubai World Central. The code is DWC. And while that airport had opened quite a while ago, 2010, and the plan originally was for Emirates to eventually be operating from there and so on and so on, everything just kind of stood still, and the financial crisis that happened globally, and then there was some difficulties with funding in the UAE itself. Everything was put on pause, and it's basically been on pause ever since. There's very little activity that happens at DWC. Like I said, a few operators, some private jet operators, a few cargo, and so on and so on. However, this week, Mohammed bin Rashid, he is the ruler of Dubai, has approved plans for a huge new airport, ultimately not just the terminal, a huge new airport at Dubai Al Maktoum, Dubai World Central, which will become the future hub of Dubai. Emirates will relocate, Fly Dubai will relocate. And if you've seen the pictures, if you haven't, you can go to my Twitter. It's at Alex in Air. This is some kind of mega jungle metropolis, okay, of an airport. 5 parallel runways, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gates. I think the official number they were touting was over 400.
Crazy.
The airport itself, I mean, 400 gates, 5 parallel runways. The airport itself will be able to accommodate 260 million passengers per year. It will be, as I mentioned, the home of Emirates. All operations from DXB will move over. We expect that to happen, not so gradually in the likes of Emirates, but will have to be kind of instant because of the way transit works. All of this is expected to be completed in just 10 years. The funding is there. The plans are in place. Dubai will have a new mega hub in a time where the hub and spoke model is under threat, where more people than ever are operating flights, are choosing to operate on flights that are ultra long haul, where airlines globally are investing in aircraft that cut out the need for a stop. The likes of Air India placing that mega order, if you remember, from Airbus, and going ultimately for the strategy of, if you're flying to India via the Gulf, no need. We're going to invest in a decent product with decent new ultra long haul aircraft, fly us direct. We're seeing that replicated across the globe. That is not stopping this new plan. What did you think when you saw this, Dan?
Well, I think anyone who's visited Dubai knows that, or well, maybe not everyone, but Al Maktoum Airport is not the most convenient option. Dubai International Airport is currently in, like, it's so well located, very close to downtown, close to a lot of the touristy areas. The new Al Maktoum Airport is far away, but at the same time, that's understandable since it needs to be massive. So I think it's exciting mainly from an environmental perspective, because right now aircraft often have to hold for a long time before landing at DXB because they only have 2 runways, one for takeoffs, one for landings. And that's just crazy when you have such a busy airport. So now at least hopefully there won't be as long waits to land and take off. This is also coinciding as Emirates starts, you know, slowly phasing out its A380s in 10 years' time. You know, I think the timeline we have is 15 or so years until the A380 is no more. So, yeah, it coincides perfectly with Emirates reducing capacity per flight, so they need more frequencies. And ultimately, I think it's exciting. DXB is very efficient, but it's not the most flashy or beautiful airport anymore. So I'm very excited to see this new masterwork. What do you think?
I think that, you know, we have to be careful with the numbers. There's a lot to be said about how the fact that it will be able to accommodate 260 million passengers per year. Great. That's true by the size of it. I mean, these plans look, you know, everything looks humongous, just immense. But international air travel growth for the Middle East. Gulf, yeah. I mean, it's for the Gulf as well. Growth for the Middle East, both on the point-to-point side, so that means if you're flying to and from the destination, but also for transit, which is where these hubs thrive, isn't set to grow anywhere near in line with those numbers. So, you know, we have to be careful with, you know, some kind of expectation management here. Does this mean that the new Dubai airport will immediately or even in the first 5-10 years be north of 200 million passengers per year? Probably not, because all indications and trends show us that that is not where air travel is going. And as I said, the second caveat that I think we have to be aware of is how the hub and spoke model is under threat. So just a quick background, we've spoken about it in one of the very, very early episodes of the podcast. Hub and spoke is when you have a hub and you're feeding in passengers into the hub and then out of the hub elsewhere. It is a lot. I mean, it's the core business model of, for example, Dubai, Doha, Abu Dhabi, Singapore, all these big hubs, they operate the hub and spoke model. That very model is under threat with the rise of ultra long haul. And that's only going to be a trend that continues going forward. So it's interesting. And I like on one side that we have this big, bold commitment here with boosting the hub that will be Dubai. At the same time, I think Dubai is in safer territory compared with some others with the hub and spoke model, because Dubai itself is a big destination. They have a lot of point-to-point traffic that other hubs do not. So in that sense, there's a safety net there. So yeah, it's an exciting announcement that I think will come to fruition, because, you know, we know that they're able to get things done really quickly in the Middle East. And I have no doubt about that with this time around, with these new plans that have been so publicly announced 100%. By the ruler himself.
I think you just mentioned something in passing a little earlier that I think is really relevant here. It's the question of, what is India's role in all of this? Because we have Air India, but also IndiGo just in the past week, in India's biggest low-cost airline, in fact, the biggest or one of the biggest low-cost airlines in the world, just placed an order for A350s. Yeah. They ordered 30 firm orders and 70 options for more aircraft. So that's also a huge, potentially 100 A350s connecting people through India instead of the Middle East. And yes, India is a growing market, but there's only so much, you know, the pie is only so big.
Yeah, it's really true. It's really interesting. And it, of course, IndiGo being India's largest airline of any category, now setting themselves up for long haul, it is because they know that, you know, so much traffic is actually just going through the Middle East to India. And it's always fascinating when you board, for example, on a flight to Dubai or to Doha, and you're boarding in Miami, or you're boarding in New York, or you're boarding in Montreal, and so on and so on. The overwhelming majority of the plane is going to India. That's going home, that maybe they're visiting friends or relatives and so on. They have such a big VFR market that it is definitely something that is going to be a continued threat to the hub and spoke model as years progress.
I think we somewhat forget, because we're in the Gulf so much, that many people around the world have a lot of preconceived notions about the Gulf. Many people are not comfortable transiting, even in Dubai. You know, people from Western countries, people from Australia, they assume different things. So I think India can kind of appear as a more appealing option, because people are like, yeah, you know, I know tons of Indians. I love Indian food. It just feels more in line with maybe people's comfort zones to take some of that traffic from the Gulf. And then, of course, I'm excited to see what kind of competition this creates in terms of products. Of course, Qatar Airways is really leading in that aspect. Emirates definitely lags behind in business class. So what is Emirates going to do to keep up with increasing competition?
With that, let's go into Q&A. Aaron is asking about airline CEO pay. He says, hey Dan and Alex, I was surprised to realize just how much money airline CEOs in the US take home every year. Were you guys aware of this? Okay. So, I knew the salaries of airline CEOs and also how they compare to CEOs of airlines in Europe, Africa, Middle East, Asia, South America, and so on. It is high. It's big money. Okay, they've got difficult jobs, you know, it is to be the chief exec, but also they are paid very, very well. Dan, did you realize? I mean, some of these numbers were recently reported. were you across this?
So I think it's reasonable for a CEO of such a big company to make, maybe $1 or $2 million is a very good salary, and it's, you know, very impressive to make that amount, but $34 million.
You're going to the extreme. So that was Ed Bastian, wasn't it, of Delta,
which is just, what is he doing?
Like, that's a lot.
And then you look at American Airlines CEO Robert Ipsum, is that it?
Ipsum.
The fact that how much did he make?
$31 million, so it was just a little bit behind Delta. United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby, he took home last year $18.6 million. Southwest the low-cost carrier, the friendly airline with free luggage. That CEO, Bob Jordan, earned just under $10 million last year. Compare that to 2022, it was $5 million. I mean, this is these are big numbers, but specifically Delta. Delta, Ed Bastian, definitely leading the industry in the amount that he is taking home as a final salary to be chief exec of a major airline at just approaching $35 million US dollars. It's a lot. I mean, there's not much more to comment on other than the fact that it's a lot.
Let's just say this, that the fact that many US airlines treat their customers so badly, they won't compensate them. They charge astronomical fares when there's no competition. There's so many things wrong with US aviation. Mm. And then the CEOs are compensated these outlandish amounts of money is...
I
disagree with it, but hey, that's not going to change anything.
I mean, yeah, I can imagine, you know, the listener who has just had to pay a penalty for her being 1 kilo overweight, wondering why they need her $100 when the CEO has just taken home $34 million. But, you know, I mean, aviation is not unique here. Much of the finance industry works like that. You know, let's not even talk about Wall Street and Goldman Sachs and so on and so on. But at the end of the day, the most people, for example, the public, are not relying on those big other organizations for day-to-day transactions and things. Whereas airlines, specifically in the US, you know, it can be like traveling by bus, flying domestically. So I think that this list will have raised eyebrows like it did for Aaron, who got in touch.
I have a very quick question, which I'll just answer quickly from Sahail. He asks, basically, why do I see Oman Air operating flights out of Doha to destinations other than Muscat? That's because Qatar Airways, for the past few years, has been leasing Oman Air aircraft. So they're operated by Qatar Airways, but it will look like an Oman Air plane. So another question here from Owen, which is also very topical for this week. Oh my God, he's traveling to Gothenburg for the first time this week to visit a friend. Wish him luck, he says. I'm sure Alex is glad it's you going him, lol.
Oh, Owen, yes, you're absolutely right. But listen, when if you can get in touch with us and let us know how it was, maybe document some things and we can feature. I like how we're talking about it as if Gothenburg is this place where nobody lives and someone's decided to adventure into the wilderness and go there. We have listeners from Gothenburg. Yeah. But we don't have many travelers who go there except my co-host. So that's why it's of particular interest.
So anyway, he asks, he literally says anyway after that, I wanted to ask about the new Lufthansa Allegris since they took delivery of their first aircraft this week with the new cabin. Do we think this can save Lufthansa?
Does Lufthansa need saving?
Absolutely not. They're doing great financially. It's more a question of...
Financially, they're
I guess
sound.
Maybe he's asking, can this save them reputation-wise? What do you think?
I don't think their reputation suffers in Germany in terms of like it would on our podcast. I think, you know, we just find it a little rich, don't we, when Lufthansa is touting a product that they, for example, their new business class. So it takes off Wednesday, today, to Vancouver. That's the first flight from Munich. But it has already flown domestically within Germany. And I had some friends, some industry colleagues on board. I saw some real-life, you know, images rather than the renderings that they share. And, yeah, I mean, okay. I thought it was all right. I don't think it's anything revolutionary. I don't think aesthetically it's so well designed or beautifully designed. I don't, you know, it's just, I mean, it looks like other Lufthansa aircraft cabins, which highly resemble a cubicle in a German office, right? Especially more now so that you're actually having cubicles with kind of the grey, some have doors, some do not, some have privacy, yeah. some do not, some have two seats, some have one, some is a throne with direct aisle access, some, you know,
I do not like the inconsistency. Why do there need to be seven different types of seats? For me as a flight reviewer,
ridiculous.
It's like, so you're telling me I need to take seven flights in Lufthansa Allegris to see what every experience is like?
To do them all.
No sense.
Gotta catch them all. But on the same time, you know, at least Lufthansa have done something to invest in premium product, but I don't think they align themselves with the rest of the industry.
Absolutely not. And yeah, we don't need to turn every episode into a hating on Lufthansa episode, so we'll leave it at that.
No, it's not. Yeah. We're pragmatic. They're very good for European connections. They're very good in many other ways, and they're not as efficient as the stereotype of German efficiency, because I think that stereotype has just expired now. But Frankfurt is still awful. But the fact that they announced this product so many years ago, 2017, and the whole thing was supposed to be done in a couple of years. A small reminder, it's 2024. Dare I end the podcast by reminding that that's almost 10 years. And with that, I think we wrap up and we do the same thing this time again.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. And to everyone I met this weekend, thank you for, you know, all the love, for coming up to me, saying you love the podcast, saying you wish Alex were there, even though I was very happy he was not. So it was my time to shine without Alex trying to steal my thunder.
I'm gonna let that comment just, like, you know, I'm going to leave it because it's the end of the episode. But little Rich, you just said your time to shine. Exactly. I gave you the room to spread your wings, to use your voice rather than just, you know, live in the shadow and so on.
All right. We'll talk next week and we will catch you guys next week on air. Bye bye.
See you later.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.